Hey, welcome to Humans of Magic. I'm your host, James Sue. This week's guest is Evan Ferrante. Evan is an actor, producer, and probably best known as the world's best Tom Cruise impersonator. Yes, that's right. He has the mannerisms, he has the voice, he has the look. He can completely pull it off. And he happens to play magic as well, which surprised the heck out of me, and we connected a little bit over social and set up this interview. I was very glad to have had the chance to talk to Evan because he is just so much more than a Tom Cruise impersonator. In this episode, we're going to talk about his love of magic, his entire career, and we're really going to get behind the human of this human of magic. Enjoy. Now, before we start the episode, I am going to give my customary plug for the Humans of Magic Patreon at patreon.com/humansofmagic. This is where you can go to support my work. You can support this show, this podcast, this labor of love, this thing I do part-time. For as little as $2 a month, you can help keep this show going, help me sustain this show from a financial perspective. There's a little bit of perks. If you're a $2 or $5 patron, you get access to the Discord. You get some access to Q&A questions. You get for me, you get access to input into future guests. You get a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff that you don't usually get if you're just a regular listener of the show. I don't usually love recording these spots, but I think it's important because this is the way that we can keep this show going, and I really would like to continue this show for the foreseeable future. There's lots of amazing, talented people in Magic the Gathering that I would still like to interview, so give me the chance to do so. Thank you very much. Now, preamble is over. Without further ado, here's my interview with Evan Ferrante. Who is Evan Ferrante?
So Evan Ferrante is a consortium combination of different things, different flavors, Baskin-Robbins, like, I don't know. I'm a Russian, Italian, Sicilian guy from New York. Grew up in a really nice town called Armonk, New York, IBM headquarters of the world. And we had an incredible cider mill called Schulte's Cider Mill that people came far and wide to have our donuts, our cinnamon donuts, and our cider. And really, that's all that the town is known for. We had a good musical theater program. I went to high school with David Harbour, you know, Stranger Things fame. And yeah, I mean, it was just a really nice upbringing. We basically grew up on a golf course. I wasn't on like one of the holes, but everyone in Armonk plays golf. I'm also Jewish, and pretty much everyone's Jewish in the town. I went to 150 bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs. And I was a child actor. I started doing theater, and that's how I kind of got my start in commercials back in the early 80s. And my brother was a ballet dancer and kind of got me, he was an older brother. He got me into the arts because I had a very small role in the Nutcracker when I was a kid. And an agent and manager was in the audience and noticed I had some charisma. I used to have a lot more charisma. As I get older, I'm losing it a little bit. But
no, I think you still do. You still have it. So.
Yeah, but I was kind of born to entertain. I really loved being the center of attention, I suppose, and I think it was a natural fit for me. You know, I was very young, but my parents were very supportive. My mom, I couldn't have done it without her. She took me in from Westchester, New York, to the city almost every day for 10 years, probably until I was 15, 16 years old. And then I would take the train in, but I went on, you know, thousands of auditions. I was with a really good agency rep at that time. Started off in commercials, then musical theater, then TV, and later film. But it was all because this agent in the audience of the Nutcracker saw me and thought I would make, I thought I would do well in commercials. But the sad part, sad state of affairs back then was that I would audition all the time, but all they wanted back then was redhead and freckles. And of course, I didn't have redhead and freckles, but they wanted redhead and freckles only. That's it for
There was a
commercials.
type, yeah.
There was a type, and we go through types. And so a few years after that, I don't know if this is the proper terminology today, but they wanted waspy characters like blonde hair, blue eyed, right? For a few years, and I didn't get any work. So for several years, I had no commercial work. And then finally, that moved into multi-ethnic or ethnically ambiguous, right? And that's when I started booking. I started going up for Middle Eastern, Hispanic, and you name it. But yeah, I had a really nice run for a little while. I had great experiences growing up. Like I said, I primarily worked in musical theater. I did a lot of soap opera work, All My Children, and As the World Turns and Guiding Light, and recurring roles on those shows. And I did one of my fondest memories was doing a show with Yoko Ono. So back in 1992, I was cast as one of nine cast members in a musical that was being produced and was written by Yoko Ono, which was super cool. And I auditioned for her, of course, and her team, choreographers and producers and directors. And I don't know if you know anything about musical theater, maybe not, but there was a guy, Jason Robert Brown, who was the musical director. He was 26 at the time, I think. And he's gone on to win many Tony Award. Many, he's gone on to win many Tony Awards. He's like the new Stephen Sondheim, I guess you could say, or he's compared to him. He was basically a prodigy and steered our show to some success. But I was cast at, it was an autobiographical story about John Lennon's murder, with all of their music that they had written together that we're singing. So it was a really incredible experience. And I was 15 at the time. I was, part of this incredible cast, but we got to, hang out with like, Cyndi Lauper and, I think members of the B-52s and some other rock bands pretty, consistently. I went to hung out with her at Yoko's birthday party, I remember one year. It was a super cool experience for a kid. I was also very young, and it was a lot for me to experience something so epic. But one of the coolest things that happened was that I got to stay at Yoko's home, which was she shared with John in the Dakota. The Dakota is the home that they lived in for years. And outside of the Dakota, it's where he was shot. But I stayed there because in 1992 or three, there was a major snowstorm that prohibited me from getting into the city for rehearsals because I couldn't make it into the city physically. Like I had to take a snowplow to the train station, and then the trains were working, but it was physically impossible for me to make it there on a regular basis. And Yoko invited me to stay at her place for the duration of the snowstorm, which was about 2 weeks. So I stayed there, slept in John's bed, played the white piano that he wrote Imagine on. It's pretty epic. And I held his Grammy. I saw his Sergeant Pepper uniform up close. Like it was insane. So
That's
I
wild.
had a wonderful, obviously ups and downs, but I had a really magical childhood filled with these really unique experiences. And it hasn't really stopped because, now, there's so much story to say about who Evan Ferrante is. But I've, for the past 20 years or so, I've been one of the most, if not the most successful Tom Cruise impressionists, impersonators, voice matches out there. I didn't know it was really a thing. I kind of stumbled into it, but it became a really good career. And I've, again, a lot of ups and downs. There's always that, but overall, it's filled me with a lot of joy, and I've spread a lot of joy in the process by doing this really strange thing. But yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Has it been a surreal life? Just
Oh
hard.
yeah.
I imagine it must be hard to imagine yourself now
Yeah.
and, or maybe yourself back then, or even in college as you were trying out Tom Cruise with I think your buddy who's doing Van Damme or whatever, whoever it was, right? So like, did you imagine you come in this way or the or end up in this shape or form?
No, there's, I never plan any of this. I never constructed any of this career or lifestyle or anything. It just, I kind of just went with the flow. And I'm a guy who doesn't always go with the flow, but I generally move with the flow when things are going well. And I fight the flow when things are not going well. So it's kind of a funny thing. I don't know how you are with the flow, but the flow is everything, you know? The flow for me, it's like the most amazing and extraordinary things happen in the moment, and the moment is the flow, you know? So I just rode that momentum. And that momentum exists in the flow as well. And I've made mistakes too. Like, I haven't done everything perfectly, but I've done some things right. And I've benefited from that, you know, those choices. But it's been, but yeah, it's totally surreal. You know, I laugh about it a lot. My friends laugh about it also. They're just incredulous that I could have made something out of this and continued for so long. You know, it should have ended a long time ago. I thought it was a flash in the pan kind of thing. There were also many times in my career where I wanted to just hang it all up. And I still would like to find an exit strategy or way to move past it, or segue into something else that is maybe requiring less energy from me. You know, because I'm not a young buck anymore. In my 20s, it was a lot easier to perform as Tom Cruise, and now that I'm in my 40s and I have a kid now, and that's a, even though it fills me with energy and love, it still sucks a lot of energy out of me, and I have to conserve my energy. And Tom Cruise doesn't, you know,
Doesn't
it's a bit,
conserve.
no, it's very, he takes a lot from me. And it's challenging. It really is. And I, you know, it's, I can't say no to the money, but at the same time, I need to
Help
figure out a
support the
way to,
family and all
I have
that,
to support
right?
the family. That's crucial. That's like, that's the premier, like, you know, focal point. But I still need to figure out, and I'm still working on that, what my exit strategies are, what's the way to not only make that much money, but that make 10 times as amount of money, but still do something that serves the community or serves my interest of spreading joy, because that's the one thing that this career has brought me, especially in the past 5 or 6 years, that's the reason why I hold on to it. It's not about the money, it's about the it's about making people happy. And if it weren't for that, I don't think I would be doing it, because it does take a lot out of me.
For sure. When you do it, it has a kind of outsized impact on how it makes someone's day, or as you said, how it makes someone's year, even sometimes, right? Whether it's a corporate event, it's an individual one-on-one thing, or it's just someone scrolling through something, one of these newfangled platforms, and just maybe a nice distraction or a nice piece of entertainment, right? Hopefully I'm not saying that in a kind of
Derogatory manner?
derogatory way.
No.
It's not at
No,
all,
no, no,
but
no, no,
that's
no. Look, here's the thing I grapple with as an artist, because I do consider myself an artist, even though there are many times where, as a perfectionist or being self-aware or just, you know, being doubtful of my abilities, I'm critical, you know, I'm very critical, and it probably comes from my upbringing. My mom is a loving mother, but she also has been very critical of my career and my, and just, you know, every time I do something, it has to not only please her, but it has to be, you know, the best of my ability. So I don't know if it comes from that. It probably does, but my biggest fear is that I dial it in sometimes. But even when I dial it in, and I think that must happen, you know, on occasion. It happens to, you know, I do it so much. People still enjoy it. People still get a lot of joy out of it. And that's, you know, it's just, you can't be precious about these things. Like, I've been doing this so long that it comes naturally to me. But but I just have to learn not to be so hard on myself and harsh, because I can be, you know. And it also prevents me from creating additional content or new content, because, you know, I've been there, you know, I go through waves of creating loads of content, I would say. And I generally want to feel inspired, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. I think that's a good thing. You want to feel inspired, and it's been more quality over quantity for most of my life. And I haven't really focused on the social media barometers or you know, criteria of success that others follow. Just because I don't, again, it's an energy thing, and I've done all right. I've managed to, I get booked all the time, regardless of my social following. I'm lucky, I'm fortunate for that, because I kind of carved out a little niche. I'm the go-to performance Tom Cruise impersonator out there. There's only in the last couple of years have I ever faced any competition at all, and it's only from a couple individuals that one of them is just a younger version of me, but he does lookalike work being more cosplay oriented, less about talent. And not to say he's not talented, but he's not a performer like I am. He doesn't have the
Right. You're
voice, he doesn't have
inhabiting
the,
the character
yeah,
or the
the
character
character,
that Cruz plays, right? And that's the total package, I think.
Look, the guy does a decent job. He does Top Gun related stuff, and he does definitely take a lot of work from me, but there's a lot of work to go around. I've had some moments of jealousy, absolutely, but also more so that I felt he was infringing on my territory. But at the same time, I'm not a monopoly, you know. And it's like I'm doing a parody of Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise is a real individual. And it's like doing SNL or Mad TV sketch comedy, improv
Sure.
based, you know. So who am I to stop anyone from doing what I do? Because I'm basically impersonating someone else. So it's silly for me to think that way, and it's just my own ego, and I'm cognizant of that. But nevertheless, I still have those thoughts, and I even came up with, and I'm still pursuing it. I've actually had a lot of people interested in making it. I used to be a film producer too, kind of overlapping my cruise career. I was a film and TV producer, so I'm always thinking about kind of creating larger things and raising money and finding distribution. And I had an idea which would inevitably be played by me, but I would also need another Tom Cruise impersonator or lookalike to be my counterpart. But I wanted to make a movie kind of like an American Psycho or Death to Smoochie. I don't know if you're familiar with that one from years
I am,
ago.
yeah.
But basically about rival impersonators who work the strip of Hollywood Boulevard. And one's an older, aging impersonator myself, who kind of had his glory days and is on his way out. And maybe he should be passing the baton to someone else, but he's got an ego. And then there's a younger Tom Cruise impersonator at the end of the block who enters the scene, takes all of the tourists away from him and all of the attraction away from him. And my character, in a fit of jealousy and rage one evening, kills him, you know, and then devolves into madness. And it becomes like an American Psycho, where my persona, Evan Ferrante or whoever the character is, and Tom Cruise's persona merge into one, and I start systematically killing people as Tom Cruise, and I believe I'm Tom Cruise. So it's like I just, you know, it's a an absolute it's a horror comedy, essentially. I can't take it too seriously, but it's something I've been wanting to do for a while, and I was inspired by those feelings of jealousy, those initial feelings of jealousy, which I don't have anymore. But about encroaching competition in this space, which is a funny thing when you think about it, but it was affecting my livelihood in the beginning. And yeah, but you know, it's just a funny part of my business.
I think it's like what they say when you're younger, or certainly I feel very similarly to you in some ways. Like when you're younger, you tend to deny or reject parts of yourself Like you want to be somebody else at certain times. I'm not saying like everybody, right? I'm saying that maybe for me or maybe for some people at certain times when talking to friends, like that's what happens. But then when you get older, you kind of just now accept these feelings and you almost lean into them, and then you just say, yes, I am jealous. I am feeling resentful or something, and then I just need to get past it and be and just recognize that, as opposed to kind of like, no, that can't be me, or manifesting into something even more negative. You know what I mean?
Well, look, it's important to do self-reflection and be self-aware as a human being. Otherwise, you're not gonna ever grow. It's connected to growth. And I hope that in our lifetimes we are all growing. That's like the hope, right? But not judging anyone who doesn't grow either. But I think growth is very important to our time on Earth. This great mystery. We don't know why we're here, really, but we come up with ideas of the meaning of life and, that love is important, or that a connection, we're social beings, is important. Letting go is important. Being in the flow is important. There's a lot of truths that we feel we've picked up over time. Friendship, obviously. Some people exist really well in solitude, though. I mean, everyone's different. And I think solitude is important for creation and for just creativity and just inward thinking, and not outward seeking. So we're all on this. I always like to think of it, the what really puts things into perspective. Just like astronauts who see the Earth from space, we're on a ball hurtling through space, a rock, and that's insane. But we have to make the best of what we
Make
have.
the most of it.
Make the
Yes.
most of it. I mean, otherwise we'll go crazy. I mean, if you start thinking about it too much, you'll go crazy, and a lot of people do go crazy.
Absolutely.
If you
Absolutely.
that's why. And like, not to get into drugs, but I've smoked pot since I was 15, but I smoke a lot less now that I have a kid. But marijuana and these thoughts and going down the rabbit hole of YouTube are not a good mixture. And a lot of
Sure.
people, I know, make that mistake, and they go to a place of a point of no return in their mindset, a conspiratorial path, where they think they know the answer, and honestly, none of us know the answer. We're all in the same boat, and we're all very much the same. We're all connected in an incredible way, and we tend to separate that, or separate that fact far too often, and that's where problems arise in our world and in society.
It's about that bit. I feel like that's the dark side of connection and finding meaning, right? Because I was reading an article about how certain people that got really, really deep into these crazy conspiracy theories, it's because they're trying to find some direct explanation for how things are in the world, and they want to feel like they're an insider, that they know something that others don't. There's this kind of like club of knowledge, you know?
Well, insider is definitely part of it, but also the validation and sense of community. Because we're, look, when you talk about religion or any kind of capitalism or any ism or at all, it's all about an imaginary construct, and it's a collective belief system. Okay? That's what it comes down to. And again, not knocking anyone's individual beliefs. And I'm not particularly religious. I mean, I'm spiritual. And again, everyone has different views and thoughts, and I respect everyone's views and thoughts, as long as it doesn't harm others, essentially. That's my thing, my motto. But we're all looking for community. And if you don't have community in your life, it can be really hard path and road. But that's one of the main through lines of all these things, community. And that's a good segue to Magic the Gathering, because I found a really strong sense of community in Magic the Gathering, which I've been playing for 5 years.
Okay, how did you was it did it start in LA? Like how did you get
And by the way,
initially?
just to stop you for 1 second, when you say humans of magic, we are talking about Magic the Gathering, not magic, right?
Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Okay,
that's
great.
Right.
Great.
That's right. I should always clarify that because sometimes people come in, they're just like, "Are we talking about magic tricks or something?"
No. It's the greatest game ever created. I just watched a clip of Post Malone talking to Joe Rogan, and basically saying exactly how I feel about the game and trying to get Joe to play it, but Joe has a very addictive personality.
He was having none of it, or he didn't want to.
Well, it's interesting because Post mainly described it well, right?
Uh-huh.
But he did say that it wasn't addicting, which it absolutely is addicting in many ways.
Sure.
Because Joe was like, I have an addictive personality. I don't think it would be good for me to be around this game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in casinos all the time and it's like hard for me, you know, with gambling all the time.
Mm.
And Post, he was like, oh, it's not gambling at all. But in many ways, I mean, let's be honest, it is for many people.
It fires up your competitive ways and
there's that.
Other things.
There's that, but yeah. just cracking packs, just opening up packs and finding
finding just
money cards or the new foils that are just incredible. The confetti foils, the halo foils, the textured foils.
Did you have a problem with that to have an issue?
In the beginning, yes. And I wouldn't say I continue to have that issue, but I'm more attracted to these days the artwork and reserve list cards and just like the lore and history and but I play all the time, you know, like I'm both. I'm not a collector, I'm also a player, you know. I play pretty regularly. Yeah.
What do you play, like Commander or other formats?
I definitely play Commander, but I'm playing Two-Headed Giant for pre-release on tomorrow, which I'm extremely excited about, Wilds of Eldraine. I've been playing Two-Headed Giant with my friend Iz Rubenstein for a very long time. We're always we're the teammates together. And I don't know if you know about that. You know Two-Headed Giant?
Format? Yes.
Yeah.
I started Magic in the 90s. It was definitely the formats back then
You're OG, so I saw a funny
meme. I am an OG.
I saw a very funny meme about guys like you who see things like Monarch or battles.
It's usually old man yelling at clouds kind of stuff.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, you're just like, what the hell is this?
Power creep
all these
things. You know, meme of like, this card used to be this way in 1994, and now it's like you get like five times the stats and all this stuff, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It just used to be a much simpler time. Now it's crazy complicated, yeah. All these mechanics, you know?
But, it's basically like we used to only have email, and now we have all these, you know, technology wise, it's kind of like that for Magic.
So for me, the past couple of years, and it kind of overlapped, I've been getting into, I got into Magic and other tabletop games too, but it's good for my brain. It's good for like just escaping the everyday. And I like the community. I've got a really tight crew I play with. Joe is one of the guys, comedians.
This is Joe Johnson Jr.
Joe Johnson, Black Nito. And I play with him pretty regularly, and I met him at our local game store, Turn Zero, many years ago in Koreatown. I just got a really tight crew that I regularly play with. We always bring new people in. There's a lot of great places in LA that, you know, I either host games in my home, we hop around like that, or we go to this place called Brain Dead a lot on Fairfax, a great establishment that's very welcoming to Magic players. I mean, God knows you spend a lot of money there. And we used to go to this bar called The Village Idiot that just closed down, but we would be there almost every.
I met Joe the last time I was in LA at The Village Idiot.
Oh, there you go. It just closed down. Closed
that was
down.
Back in December or January, though.
I wonder, was I there? Because I might have been.
You might have showed up later. We didn't intersect, but I had a very nice lunch and like a 4-hour conversation with Joe that wasn't for a podcast. It was just chatting. You know, walked around Hollywood. So
yeah. So, sorry. So about the same time I got into Magic, I've also been rock climbing. And rock climbing and Magic, it's everything I need right now in my 40s. Like they're both kind of puzzles, you know, one's physical and mental puzzle.
Yeah.
Magic is not physical, but they complement each other perfectly. And it's like, other than my family, it's all I really need right now.
Yeah. I'm also laughing because I got to shout out my friend in Shanghai. Oh. Arthur, he happens to be in his late 30s and a huge fan of climbing and Commander. He actually runs one of the Commander groups here in Shanghai.
Well, a lot of climbers play Commander.
Yeah.
So a lot, people at my climbing gym, it's like Fight Club, like everyone plays plays Magic, and you just wink and a nod and just everyone's like, "Yeah, let's talk. Let's talk about our decks. Sometimes we bring our decks and we play there. But I got into it. My first commander was Carador, Ghost Chieftain, and it's a reanimator deck.
Solid.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. And I've built about 24 since then.
Okay. So
Yeah, so I'm
you're definitely hardcore
I mean I'm
into
in
Magic at this
deep.
point.
I'm in deep
Yeah. You're not just the person
and
that has the one precon that breaks it out.
no,
You've got 24
and I
decks.
don't have an aversion to proxying at all, and I welcome because for the inclusion reason, I think obviously it's a very expensive game and I love just playing with anyone. I want everyone to play. But I don't really proxy that often, and I probably should because it would save me a lot of money. But yeah, it's been great though, and I don't know what I would do without it in my life, but I also am excited to maybe one day have my kid play it too, because I think it'll be good for him.
He's still a little too young, but you mentioned before the recording he likes to touch the cards, or will you let
My
him touch some of the cards?
fiance, by the way, and I just got engaged a few weeks ago, so I could say
Oh,
fiance,
congrats.
but she just shook her head when I said, I can't wait to get my kid into it, because she's not really on board with it. But, so
Because
sorry,
she
what
sees
we.
how hooked you are on it, and it's,
Well,
yeah.
yeah, but look, I'm a degenerate. We call each other degenerates, by the way. Everyone I play with are degenerates, but my friend group considers me the biggest degenerate because I have a kid. I'm the only one of us that has a kid, and I still manage to play Magic every week for hours at a time, and they don't understand how I'm able to do it. But
Yeah.
I have a very supportive partner, and she knows that it gives me joy. And my joy is my health. And if I don't have my health, then what is it? What is there?
Yeah, it's
So,
mental health, emotional health, physical
yeah.
health, all important, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, what is it
So,
about Magic players and like Magic players in showbiz? Because I feel like there's a lot of folks that play. Like some don't really advertise it, but some will just show up randomly in
yeah.
a gameplay video, and it's just like, why is that? Is it just because it just sparks some sort of creative juices that creatives are just drawn
Well,
to, or something
it's
else?
funny because I think it's more the social aspect of it, because I don't really find it to be creative in the sense that D&D is about it's imaginative storytelling. I mean, that sparks a lot of joy for artists. A lot of artists play Magic, play D&D. Magic, as you know, is more statistics, probability, a little deception, poker, chess, combined mechanics. It's shrouded in fantasy elements, but you don't need to care about the lore or talk about the lore at all. It's really just about what you read on the card and synergy, the synergistic elements. And I think it's just when people give it a chance or open to it, they realize that it is the greatest game ever created. I can't find a better game. If there is a better game, let me know, but I really feel like this is it. And it has staying power. It's been around for a long time, and it's only getting more powerful, despite the fact that people have expressed a lot of grievances with Hasbro and the fact that they're overprinting and it's very hard to keep up. But there's nothing more exciting than pre-release. And when new commanders come out that spark joy, that are exciting, it's you get everyone riled up about it and you just like can't stop talking about what you're gonna throw in your deck that's gonna make it pop. Like this is just like when you're an EDH player, this is like relatable content. Like we all know how awesome it is. And I take my
What?
breaks sometimes. Sometimes I'm burnt out, but usually it's not that long. Maybe it's a week or two, and I'm like, let's get a game going. And I have a friend, Dan Black, comedian, who he's the one who projects and calls me the degenerate, but he literally, there's not a day that goes by that he's not like, can we get a game? Can we get a game? Can we get a game?
What would you say are some of your favorite Magic combinations or colors? Like, how would you? I guess you're with 20 something decks, you must be into all kinds of stuff, but.
Well, I think my favorite thing to do, my friend Edwin, who I play with, Edwin Toe, I think that's his last name, Toe, he says, I like to yeet out creatures, just yeet them out onto the board. I don't know if you heard that expression, yeet. I
But
have,
yes.
basically just
I'm still old, young enough. I've heard it, yeah.
cheat things out. I like to cheat things into play. So whether it's Sneak Attack or Elvish Piper or, obviously just so dra my dragon deck, my Ur dragon deck is my favorite deck. It's very Timmy. It's a Timmy deck. Big creatures. I do a lot of damage. I get them out for either much less than their casting cost or free. Lurking Predators is one of my favorite cards in Magic. Silvala Stampede, because you basically bring out enormous things from your hand or your library for free to the battlefield. Obviously, I like recursion decks too. Like I have a Sauron deck right now, Lord of the Rings, but I play the 8 mana cost Sauron, which no one plays. Everyone plays Sauron the Dark Lord. I play Lord of the Rings Sauron, and it's a reanimator deck, and I just reanimate everything for nothing, Or Living Death. Living Death is a great card, one of the best cards ever. But I also like, I've gotten into some combo magic because Joe has made me a better player for sure. And I say better because I just take out the weak cards from my deck, put in stronger cards. My decks have gotten stronger playing in this play group. I have another friend, Sean Marquette. He also, has to win on turn 4 or 5. He's in walking in Joe's footsteps or path and builds really strong decks that win consistently without much interaction on turn 4, 5, and you got to slow them down. You got to stop these guys, okay? You got to take out these pieces that win them the game early. And I don't care how salty they get, you just got to do it. So I'm the guy that sometimes has to do that, but I try to do it at the opportune moment, of course. Or on the defensive side, I have a Teferi's Protection in hand. I've got a Heroic Intervention. I've got a Boros Charm. But I basically have decks that have answers to most things. My Karador deck, still one of my favorites, is a toolbox for everything. I have answers to everything in that deck. It's awesome. My Blink deck, my Preston the Vanisher Blink deck, so much fun. But it's really hard to navigate because it requires a lot of math and a lot of just big brain power, big brain moves. Yeah, I like doing stupid things like my Kadrick deck. I don't know if you know Kadrick. Have you heard of
I
him?
do,
Boros deck, yeah. I just make copies of legendary permanents. It's insane. I've once made like three or four Elesh Norns, or I do stupid things like that. So when I make those big moves, those Christmas land moves, as my friend Iz likes to call it, I like to exist in that world, or play a Rite of Replication on a Terror of the Peaks, stuff like that. That never happens, but when it happens, it's glorious, and everyone, it's a memorable evening, Like I like to create lasting memories. I don't like to do a Dockside Teemer, Sabertooth win every time, or a Food Chain Squee combo, like. That's kind of boring, Or a
It's about memorable moments, sure.
Heliod Walking Ballista. No one remembers that, okay? People are just like, get out of here with that nonsense. Or someone doing a Psych Rift and then not winning, Those things happen and they're unfortunate, and you kind of just are like, can we just move on to the next game already? Just win the game. But I've moved into combo territory, even though I don't love it, but I do usually 3 to 4 card combo moves, which require a little more pieces together. Obviously, I focus on some tutors, some card draw, but I'm always learning. We say to each other all the time, we're always bad at magic. Like we're always learning. But
For sure.
I do speak the language though now. The vernacular of magic, I've the lingo I
Oh
can
yeah, it's
cover.
coming across. You're a magic player, for sure.
I'm a magic player. I make mistakes sometimes, but I'm a magic player. Yeah.
'Cause you mentioned there being like obviously there's a social community, there's the offline like folks that you play with, and then there's kind of a magic community at large that's online and all, I would say almost too online sometimes, and they have interesting opinions. Like do you is there how do you see the differences? Is there a difference of opinions like when you like just interpret magic cards or things coming out with your friends offline versus like what you read about
When you say
basically?
opinions, you mean opinions of like what things mean on the card, like calling a judge over for a mechanic
Oh
question
no, I
or?
just mean like there's a lot of discourse on the internet about where magic is going, where it should go, where it shouldn't go, and all that
I
kind
see.
of like almost like a company commentary on the
Okay,
product
so
itself.
I follow some of that stuff on Twitter, but I feel like people get, on any of these platforms, false outrage, this is the hill I'm gonna die on kind of thing. I don't really pay much credence to it or, put much energy into that because it's a game that we just genuinely love. Like, I don't know why people complain all the time. I mean, I get that they feel like some sense of ownership of it a little bit, and conglomerates or corporations like Hasbro, they're worried that they're going to ruin the game, and there are people who have strong opinions about universes beyond and the secret lairs and stuff. I'm pretty whatever about it. Like, look, if it doesn't float your boat, then move on. Don't buy that product. Obviously, it appeals to a lot of people. Like, the Lord of the Rings was like the most successful thing ever, and they did an incredible job marketing it. You can't deny that. Am I a fan of Doctor Who? Do I care about that one? Pro not really, but people do. So it's not for everyone. And then there's certain people who just want to play 93, 94 old school Magic, and or vintage. That's great. Good for them. I wish I could afford that, I can borrow someone's decks. I played with power cards. I played with the Black Lotus. I played in a power cube. That was one of the most fun experiences of my life. I love cubes, by the way. Cubing is my favorite. My friend is built a Legends cube or a Commander cube, essentially. So it's a lot of Commander staples, a lot of Legends. So much fun. And the power cube, my friend Matt Monroe owns a power cube, and it's like the most amazing cards. Like, a lot of the Power Nine is there. It's crazy. And that was the closest I'll ever come to holding those. I mean, maybe one day I'll start buying or upgrading my collection of power, but it's like, can I really justify that right now with a kid? Not really, I could pay for his education with that,
You can always
So,
proxy your borrow cards, sure.
exactly. But I don't get involved in those discourses. I just have better things to do with my time. Of course, I care about the community, but I also think that that's a very small percentage of people who are just particularly vocal keyboard warriors, and they just care so much about things that are just of very little importance in the end of things. I can't even think of like one of the biggest gripes, out there, other than overprinting. I mean, yes, I think it's overwhelming, but they're trying to make as much money as humanly possible. And Magic the Gathering or WotC makes up, I think, 80% of Hasbro revenues.
Something
So
crazy like that,
something
yes.
insane. So I mean, like, they need, look, it's better if they survive than if they don't survive. So whatever, I'd rather they
It's definitely the
survive.
golden goose. Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely is.
But did I enjoy it more a few years ago? I don't know. Like, I love where it's at right now. I have again, great friend group, great play group, and it's always growing. And again, we always are very inclusive with our group, but anyone can play with us, doesn't matter. It's like, obviously, I don't want to play with assholes, but other than that, we're pretty open. And honestly, there's some great cards that have come out over recent years. So, and that wouldn't have happened if there wasn't overprinting, for instance. So, I'm all about like finding those new synergistic connections between cards, and maybe this card is a better card to slot into my deck and take this card out. I'm always thinking about that. So I have my 26 decks or so, and whenever a new card comes in that is exciting, I present it to my play group. I'm like, wouldn't this be great in this? And I always get their test of temperature. Or I just do it. But it's one of my favorite things to do. Just build decks. Like, when I draft or play limited, that is, or pre-release stuff, that's so much fun. But it's not even the gameplay itself, it's the deck building, it's the drafting portion of it that is super fun. Love that stuff.
I find this always super fascinating because you strike me as quite a social person. Like you're not shy about, I mean, in your line of work or what you do outside of magic, that's obviously the case. Like you kind of have to be to be in your profession. And I think that there's a lot of magic players that maybe are a little bit more like me, that are a little bit more introverted or like withdrawn. I used to be the person that was like at the LGS and just wanted to play magic and didn't want to make eye contact with people. And it's just so, I think it just speaks to the game's appeal now that it's gone so wide that you have everybody And it's no longer like when we were in high school where it's like, you know, there's like a jocks table and there's a magic table and there's a nerds table, and I was
Yeah.
definitely in the last two tables. It's
I
not like
mean,
that anymore. It's just mass appeal.
yeah, it is mass appeal. Under the umbrella of this game and the LGSs, I mean, there's definitely, when I first started Magic, my friend told me, who was a judge and a store manager, told me that it could be a toxic environment, right? Or that even though they're trying to be inclusive, it's very exclusive and velvet rope in certain play groups. And I didn't really get it, but then of course I saw it as years went by. And certainly with people being vocal about their experiences, and again, maybe it's from a place of privilege, but I just didn't see it initially. But what I love about it is that it brings in so many different, such a variety of people, not just introverts, extroverts, but every kind of person you can imagine has found their way through those doors of the LGS to play Magic. That's pretty awesome. And like just an example, aside from, again, every race, religion, creed, trans, female, whatever, kids, and 65-year-old guys, there's also a lot of homeless people who play Magic. I don't know if you know that.
I had no idea. No,
So
God, tell me about this.
in my store, I would be playing with people that I thought were just spent a lot of ta time there. They spent hours there. Some guy even slept on the couch. And the store was just really welcoming of anybody. Obviously, if you were destructive or did something or did drugs in the store, you were kicked out. But I found out later that several people that I was playing with are actually homeless. And that blew my mind. But I loved it because it was a place of a safe space for them, but also a place where they could, feel like they were part of a community, and that again, that's what they were lacking. And I thought that was really wonderful,
So the store
Yeah.
owner or the people running the
Yeah.
store, like they have a, I guess they must be kind-hearted in that sense. They're able to
Yeah, and
accommodate that.
people would lend them decks because they couldn't afford decks, number one. And or they would even spot them. One of the players, I'm not going to name any names, but a friend of mine had some hardship some years. I don't know if he was. I don't want to be speak out of. I don't want to speak ignorantly, but I feel like I'm pretty sure he was homeless for some time, but he ended up becoming a pro player and winning a lot of tournaments in store tournaments, and what are they called? The RPQs? Yeah. Regional qualifiers, right? But he did it with other people's decks or people spotting him, and he kept growing as a player through just generosity and kindness.
Just getting
And
him through a rough spot in his life, basically.
yeah, and I don't think he's in that position now, but at one time I think he was. And there was, there have been other characters who've come through who even harder times, but they have been kicked out for various reasons. But we have a host of personalities and characters that play. It's and that, I like that about it. I don't get along with everybody, but most people I do.
No, it's
I'm
impossible to
pretty
get along with everybody. There's definitely eccentric characters, there's more like social people, there's all kind people
Well,
of all walks of life.
there's also people who come in with an ex don't have the rule zero conversation. They just, pub stomp everybody with their CDH proxy deck, and you're just playing casual commander. And that's kind of annoying. That's annoying. I mean, especially if it takes an hour of your time. If it takes 15 minutes, like, cool, you won on turn three. Congratulations. But if someone beats everyone and it takes an hour, and that's just not a fun experience, and their deck is super overpowered and never had that conversation, that's just annoying. But I don't know. I'm pretty tolerant of everyone's gameplay. I always have been. I've only had one or two blow-ups in my entire time playing. And it wasn't like a major blow-up, but I was with a friend, but I remember I don't scoop very often, but I did scoop one time, because I have a kid, right? And at that time, he was a year and a half. And I felt this was justified, my scoop, because I told my friend, and we're very close, you know, it's not like we're not friends anymore. But I said, look, I have an hour to play. I could play one game. So I'm coming into the LGS. I got to get back to my kid. And I went in, and he ended up doing something to me that almost, it wasn't spite. It was more just like, I'm going to mess around with you. And for no reason other than to mess around with you. But I'm not only going to mess around with you, I'm going to stop you from playing the game of Magic. So you're basically just going to sit there with your cards in hand, almost like a Drannith Magistrate, and you're not going to be able to play the game for the rest of the game. But it
Just
wasn't Drannith.
incapacitated. Yeah, you can't
Completely,
really.
completely shut me down. I was even mana screwed, okay? So it was like doubly insulting. And I wouldn't have cared if I was going to hang out there and play another game, but I literally only had that game to play. So I basically was like, I'm not going to sit around and just watch you guys play. I only had one game. I'm scooping. Enjoy your game. And I said it politely, but I couldn't. I had to leave. You know? So that was the only time that I've ever flipped out. And it wasn't much of a flip out. It was just a scoop. But I left the game, which I never do. Yeah.
It's just one of those things. I think Magic is just a game that has like almost infinite ways it plays out in combinations. So
Yeah.
you just got to figure out what's fun for yourself, and you don't
Yeah.
really need to apologize for that stuff because it's your time,
Yeah.
and it's about a social contract. And sometimes if
Yes.
you feel like your social contract is violated, you definitely have the right to just go elsewhere with your time and
Yeah.
your attention. So.
It, with our within our play group, if any one of us has an episode, usually we're, you know, we man up about it and have a
Yeah.
conversation next time we see each other or that evening, or
Sure.
say we apologize, because it's almost like, have you ever seen The Bear? It's a show on Hulu.
Oh yeah. I just
Yeah.
binged both seasons.
So you
Incredible.
know when he does this? You know when he does this? Yeah. It's like that. When things get too heated, we just, you know, we don't do that, but we should do that. That's
And
basically
for
the
those who are
move.
listening to the audio version, like yeah, we're just the thing in the bear where when the chefs have a blowout, they just agree they're gonna rub make a circular motion, just kind of like
Yeah. It's
we'll
basically
get
just
past it.
taking a pause, taking a breath, and realizing that we're all one and the same. We're all going through it. We're in the muck together. And you know, it just goes back to that. We're all dealing with a lot of the similar things, and we just don't really go deep enough to discover those things. We just play this game on the surface, but there's other things that are going on that we're all relating to one another, and we just don't really realize it.
It's gotta just be fun. It's gotta just be a game. That's what magic is. And
Yeah.
don't get too serious about it, too uptight
Right.
about it. And just if mistakes were made or it wasn't pleasant, just talk about it
Well,
and
it's
just.
interesting that you said that because, you know, I think of CEDH, right, which I've been a little bit hesitant and reluctant to play, but I, you know, for various reasons, and mainly because I thought that it wasn't going to be fun, right? Just because I feel like anything that's not casual has a potential of not being fun. That was like my thoughts were, my preconceived notions. And I would say I'm wrong about that because, first of all, I like playing constructed play and some competitive magic. It is more intense, but I do like it. I still can have fun. It really just depends on my mindset going in. But I've been brought into CDH recently by some of my friends. CDH, sorry. And I've enjoyed it. It definitely is more involved and more intense. I got to really be on my toes with every move. Every move is very important, and timing is important. It's almost like playing a different game, to be honest, even though I'm playing with a lot of the same cards. But I respect it. I did have fun, and I'm open to playing more, which was a big barrier I never thought I would say, you know. But it's a different experience. Like, I don't know if I want to play CDH for 6 hours straight, like I do with casual. Casual, I can keep playing. Let's get another game in.
Because you got to be a
But
lot more locked in, like
yeah, so I don't
every
think
turn.
exactly. And I could do that for an hour. I could do that for 30 minutes to an hour, but I don't think I could do that consistently throughout the night without burning myself out very quickly. That's my only concern about it. It's just too intense. It's like the same reason why, and I'm not, this is just not my thing, but chess is, again, chess, I think, is one of the greatest games ever, if not the best too. That's like, you know, it's different than Magic in some ways because It's so perfect. Chess is like a perfect game, right? I really can't say anything bad about chess except for the fact that for me, for my personality, it's too intense for me to play chess. I don't experience the joy out of winning a chess match because it puts me through the ringer. Like it's like, and again, maybe that's because I'm not great at it, but it's so like I can't. Here's the thing. I can be very good at chess if I applied myself and was willing to go the distance into really learning the game and all the moves and the repetition. But I don't know if I want to live that kind of life. You know, like the learning curve for magic is not as strenuous and as much of a struggle as it would be for chess. Chess is incredibly intense. But when I think about CDH, I do put it on a similar level as chess within, you know, it's still not chess, but it's very intense, and you really got to learn the meta so well for because it's a 100 card singleton format as opposed to learning the meta for standard or modern or something else. Significantly harder for magic for CDH, and I don't want to do that to myself. You know, I feel like it's like not going to be enjoyable. Like I don't mind playing a game of CDH, but I do not want to get great at CDH. You know? But that's just me. Some people do, and some people love it, and they love talking about it. It's just not me.
Yeah, full admission time, right? Like I'm
Are
way
you?
less of a of an EDH player. I'm way more of a legacy, modern, competitive
Okay.
spike, as they call it. Yeah, like I used to go to these tournaments. Like I used to play CC card formats. I knew the world before Commander became the biggest
Sure,
format in Magic.
totally.
And
So wait, so are you CDH then? You do CDH as
I
well?
do a little bit of CEDH. I definitely find that
Okay.
to be a lot closer to something like Legacy. It's basically like
Yeah.
an eternal format that's very high powered, and
I
I've
like
definitely
Legacy, by
played.
the way. I
Oh no,
enjoy Legacy.
and there's nothing wrong with like people enjoying different things. Like I'm just on the record saying that like I always have challenges with playing Commander just because it
Totally.
feels a little bit too much like a board game to me. Like it's a board game with magic cards, right? And it's about having fun, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I like playing a game more, maybe more like chess, where it's very black and white. Like the objective is just to beat one opponent, and you do it using any means necessary. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I don't know what the analogy is to performance. Like maybe that's more like, maybe CEDH is like Daniel Day-Lewis, like doing like crushing a role, and then maybe Commander is like improv night or something. Like I don't know. It's like
So
different levels of preparation and mindset, you know?
I enjoy both. It's just about, again, the hours that I play it and commit myself to it. It's draining for me to go through a tournament experience
Oh yeah, it is draining.
with competitive magic, the grind, okay? The grind is really takes too much out of me. It doesn't become enjoyable after a certain point. I'm just exhausted, and I think it's to me it was unhealthy for me. For casual Commander, I also feel that way sometimes when I play for 6 hours or 7 hours, but it's less draining. It's more ca it's just less stressful. It's a stress. And but one of the best formats that I played competitively, even though it's not really a competitive format, but dual commander or 1v1 commander, French commander. So one-on-one, and you play with like some power, and it's you tune the decks differently. The decks are built differently. You build it for 1v1 versus multiplayer. It's a very different format. Archon is what it was called. Archon and Dual Commander. So I played that for a little while. Like I said, I play pre-release and drafts quite a bit. Love that.
And
And
that's a nice mix of like competitive, but also social, like you're just learning new cards and yeah.
What I'm saying is I enjoy all of it for what it is. In the same way that I do enjoy once in a while playing a cube of the un cards, you know, like the
Oh yeah, the silver bordered cards, right?
unglued or, you know, yeah, like
And yeah.
the silly cards. It's a completely different game. You're not playing Magic anymore. You're playing some other silly, ridiculous universe of a game, but it's fun once in a while. Do I want to play that all the time? No. But it can be fun with the right group of people. And I split my time up, but I usually like playing Commander because of my crew that I play with. I don't really play competitive Magic with a crew, you know? I play with random people in competitive Magic.
Yes.
And not to say I don't like that occasionally, but I'm not that grind guy. I don't do, you know, I did it. I got Arena a couple times, and my girlfriend or my fiance now every time has told me to deactivate my account. And I so I've done that 3 times now because I got into the grind. I did the grind a few times. And of course, you know, I chose mono red because it's the easiest one to master. And I ended up getting mythic, I think, twice. But it takes a lot to get mythic twice. It's such a grind. And I'm not willing to go the distance on Arena. Like, that's crazy. But people do it. I'm just not that person. I'm not built that way. I just have, you know, again, it's not like my time is worth more, but I personally have better things to do with my time. Again, I have a kid. I got to make money. I can't, you know, it's just too much.
Absolutely.
And
I feel
it's
like,
unhealthy. It's unhealthy to do that.
it goes back to what we were saying before, which is like, put it in perspective and know yourself, right? It's like, and we all channel competitiveness or casualness or fun in different ways. Like for me, even like, I'll be honest, I've scaled back a lot from Magic. I prefer doing these podcasts. I prefer going for a nice long, like 10-mile run or something, because that to
Totally.
me is like a lot more fulfilling. I hate to
So
say it, but
soul enriching, gratifying.
yeah, like just stepping away from the computer. I'm too addicted to
I
Instagram
know.
and Twitter and these things. So I've been trying to do more reading, like more talking to
Yeah,
people,
me
more
too.
going
Me
out for
too.
walks, and just like having a more balanced life. And I feel like I definitely felt like
That's good.
being a much more competitive Magic player like a decade ago or something like that, and being a real what they call a try hard. Like I would like travel to Grand Prix and like
It
I
was a
was trying to
phase.
win,
It
right?
was a phase
And
in your life. It was a phase in your life. You've done it. You did
yeah.
win, I'm sure. And now you're over it, and you're moving on to other things that are more meaningful, deeply meaningful to your life. Look, you only have one life to live, you
Exactly.
know? Do you want to be a spike your whole life? Do you want to chase that trophy your whole life?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the decision you got to make. Some people do it. I
It's
don't.
also,
It's
yeah, I know,
it's not
and
my path. Not my path at
exactly.
all.
It's not my path. And I also kind of realized like maybe you can relate to this too. It's like you just realize as you get older that you're just better at certain things. And I just can't keep up with young grinders or kids that are
No.
like doing Magic
No.
Arena like 24/7. And if I'm being honest, I think I'm way better at doing this in terms of skill set and improvement and like vibing. And I feel like I'm uniquely equipped to do this as opposed to just, oh, I'm gonna go play a game of Magic. And I play Magic for fun now, so it's not really like it's gone. But you know, I'm married, I have
No, great.
obligations, I have a full-time job, and it's just like it's just where you put your energy. And it's just I would much rather do this. And I know I'm better at being an interviewer than I am at ever playing Magic. So it's like I would rather. So yeah, it's just I don't know. Like I'm not saying I'm the greatest out there interviewing somebody, but it's like
Well,
I'm definitely much better at this objectively than actually playing Magic. It's just I've tried. I just don't have. I'm not cut out for it. It's like trying to be a grandmaster and you realize like you're not cut out for it, right? So
I think it's also about, and maybe you found this, but finding peace in what you're doing, or finding purpose or usefulness or utility, like you're providing some service to the community.
Yeah, this is going way wider than
And
me playing Magic. Like maybe in the
yeah,
same
okay.
way when you entertain
Yeah.
people, like it's beyond yourself, right?
Well, doing anything competitive typically is a self-interested pursuit, you know? Like, how are you truly helping people or being of service to people if you're just going after your own accolades or accomplishments, you know?
Yeah, and if I'm being honest, I did a lot of that just to kind of validate myself or try
Yeah,
to feed
sure.
my own ego. And it was just
Totally.
not the right direction because it's not like I
Yeah.
wasn't like someone who just like grew up, like was born and was just good at Magic. Like I had to work at it. But then I realized like I was kind of not,
Yeah.
do I really want to keep working on this? And I kind of decided not really. So.
All of it is okay. Whatever you did, whatever choices you made in the past, all of it's fine. Just forgive yourself. I mean, it's just that, you know, there's no we got to be kinder to ourselves, you know, in everything. And I have no regrets in life. I've done stupid things, I've done foolish things, but I have no regrets. I have a wonderful family now, and again, I'm still spreading joy for a living, making money doing it. And I'm also in real estate too, which I am sorry I didn't get into earlier in my life, but 2 years ago I got into real estate, and I'm now helping friends, family, my network find homes that, either forever homes or investment properties, or selling their homes to help this situation or that situation. But that gives me joy because I'm affecting other people's lives. So yeah, I mean, I like being of service to others, and that makes me happy.
What is that like, by the way, just being in real estate? I mean, are you using like a cross section of skills that you've developed from before, and like how is it overall?
So certainly my upbringing as a obviously an actor, being charismatic helps a little bit, but and personable, just social. So and I'm also 44, so I know people from New York, where I grew up, and LA, which I've been 12, 13 years now. And because of that, I have a very strong, I came into the business with a strong sphere of influence. And prior to, and I know a lot of people, I'm very social, like I said, but the other reason is I was in film production for a long time, film and TV. So I'm bringing a large number of potential clients from that space. And if you come from a place of integrity, and you come from just an honorable place, you're just a good person, and you're fun to be around, that's how I get clients. You gotta act a certain way and be a certain way. I wouldn't say act, but be a certain way. However, on the flip side, there's a lot of agents out there who are not very nice people. They step on toes, they burn bridges, they, do whatever it takes to be number one. That to me is less important to me. Number one, I don't care about that. I'm just, again, trying to provide for my family. I've got some ambition, but I'm not going to do it at the cost of ruining relationships. But many agents do this, and they not only survive, but they thrive in this business because, unfortunately, most clients just care about the price that their home sells for. And if an agent does really negative things to get to where they're at, but produces results, that's all that matters in the end to these clients. And so they keep doing better and better and better. Now, what I'm trying to figure out is, can I have a successful career in this business? And I think I can, by being a good person. As a film producer, by the way, just to talk about that, and TV producer, I was less sure about that. I feel like in order to be a fantastic, successful, thriving film producer, and there aren't many of them, you do need to do some unsavory things. And
That
that's,
there
I
aren't
think,
like entirely wholesome models to follow, almost, right?
not it, no, because it's a really screwy business, and because it's so screwy, and I'm not saying all the time you got to do this, but a lot of times you might have to go to that level of negativity or bad energy
To get it
to,
past the line or whatever it
yeah.
is.
And that didn't vibe with me over time. I think that's why I did it for 12, 13 years, maybe. I did it from 2007 to about 2019. Yeah, so 12, 13 years. And had some great experiences, but ultimately, I don't think I was cut out for it because I think I was too wholesome and good of a guy. I was never willing to go the distance and be a scumbag. And the industry is ripe with that, or rife with that. And in the real estate world, we definitely have that element, but I think you can also do well by being just a great agent.
You can, the system allows you to have to define yourself maybe in the ways that Evan wants to define himself and have certain set certain ethical and other standards,
The
right?
problem with the business is that it's super expensive. Well, the market's really saturated with a lot of agents, number one, but it's very expensive to be a real estate agent. There's so many costs involved, not just your brokerage fees, your office fees, your E&O insurance, because there's a lot of litigious activity. But just to get out of the gate, you got to spend money. And the first couple years as an agent, the majority of agents, make no money at all. So imagine not having, I mean, you have a job, but you're an independent contractor. You're not considered an employee. You're an independent contractor, get a 1099, not a W-2. And you don't make any money for 2 years, but you're spending probably with all the socializing, because you've got to socialize, probably 10 to 25,000 for the year, but you're making nothing.
Right.
That is unsustainable for most people. So I'm super lucky to not only have done very well the first couple of years as an agent, but I also have multiple streams of income because I'm a Tom Cruise impersonator. If I didn't have that money, I would be, and again, I've done many sales. I'm sorry to sound like Trump, many sales, but I've done about, in my first year, I did like two to three major deals. By major, I mean like substantial deals and four little ones, like lease listings, but enough that I had a very good first year. But I still would have been suffering had I not had other income coming in. And that was having a good year. So I can't imagine people who are struggling, and they just leave the business altogether because they can't do it. It's very hard.
I think that's definitely I don't know if I would exactly call it an unfair advantage, but it is an advantage that you have, like just having like backup sources of
I
income
mean,
and
yeah,
different things, and not being like
exactly.
stressed to just you have to make this one thing work, you know?
Other people also come into the business with some other income, which is great. Or they come in with 6 months of savings, 8 months of savings. That's what they say. You gotta enter the business with savings. And it's true, because you probably won't get a deal for a long time.
There might be nothing to show for it for like the first year or 2 years.
But
That's
anyway.
is it like that as an actor in general too? Like you're just it's just really,
Well,
really hard and
it's feast or famine. Like, let's say you're really, really talented, right? And you have been known to book things. It still is feast or famine. Like, you might not work for a year. That's the reality. I'm lucky because my Tom Cruise impersonation, I get booked because I'm one of the few people that do what I do. So I'm super lucky. I don't have to
And you don't
audition.
have to answer to like some sort of like casting call agent or pr
No.
production thing. It you
But
empower yourself.
so I have a very unique circumstance that, but I was an actor, a regular actor, since I was seven. And I was auditioning like everyone else and being rejected thousands of times. So I've experienced all that. I've experienced so much rejection in my life. Oh, and by the way, that set me up for success in real estate too, because both acting and producing, I faced tons of rejection, right? More so in acting, but as a producer, false starts, empty promises, just a lot of disappointment, right? In real estate, I'm dealing with tangible properties. In producing, I dealt with intangible property, right? So there's so much more, even though it's a difficult business, real estate, it's so much more satisfying in every way.
I think that's what really connected when I listened to one of the past interviews you did, is because I almost, this sounds so weird, but I feel like we have similar ways of thinking about certain things, and I'll explain what that means. Like I've not been an actor, creative, a real estate agent for any amount of my life, but I have been in tech, and I have been in on the startup side of tech, and I've just learned to deal with a lot of disappointments. Like I've just learned to like. You pitch something, they say they want to put money into it or they want to help you, and then you find out that half of them are grifters and the other half, like they don't follow through. They stop responding to your emails. I know what it's like to have that sort of putting your heart out there, putting yourself out there, trying to be genuine, authentic, and just getting stuff shoved back. And it's hard not to become cynical, and there was a phase where I was incredibly, incredibly cynical about life, and I'm just mellowed out now. I've just kind of found my peace, you know what I
That's
mean?
great. That's wonderful. I commend you for that. And I left the entertainment industry, other than my Tom Cruise thing, because I was burnt out, because I got jaded, because I got cynical. And also just because I, again, after having a kid, I was like, I don't
And
want
you have
to do this.
finite energy. Do I really want to be fighting that battle uphill, right? Yeah.
at my age, I'm like, I don't want to be doing this while I have a family that I'm raising a kid. I don't want to be putting myself through that those highs and lows that
Yeah.
I'm
And I'm trying to start a family. So I'm like in your shoes a few years back, basically.
But I was
Yeah.
doing it. You're doing it on your own terms now, which is great. And you're not relying on other third parties. But as a producer, as an independent film producer, I was relying on a lot of third parties. And that's the more parties you rely on, the more disappointment, that entails. But yeah, I'm at peace now. And of course, I love doing creative things and starting a podcast or doing my own short films or even a feature that's production friendly. I dream about stuff like that all the time. But again, relying on very few people to do it and just a core group of people I trust and want to work with. People I know, my family, essentially, working with family, whether they're actual family or just friends that are very close and you
Close
trust.
circle, sure.
Close circle,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. Those are the best people to work with, even though it could be trying sometimes. But, and I'm not saying it's easy to work with friends. It's just that eventually down the line, if you can get to that place where you're working with not just talented people, but people you can trust and that you have a really great rapport with, then you've done very well.
That's so key because oftentimes a lot of what we do, I would imagine a lot of times what you do is can be solitary. So you have to find the right support network to motivate yourself or to bounce ideas off
There's
of.
a book called Letters to a Young Poet. Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. I've not read it. Can you set it up for us?
Rainer Marie Rilke, right? And I don't know the whole bio for the poet, for the writer, but it's letters from Rainer Marie Rilke to a younger poet, literally as it says. But they're basically advice from like a mentor to an apprentice in the world of poetry. And essentially, it's all about creativity and solitude, which we talked about earlier, and the importance of solitude. It's not loneliness, it's solitude, and how that cultivates the creative spirit. I highly recommend it to any artist. Another one is The War of Art. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, Stephen Pressfield, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Brilliant title too, to take the art
Yes,
of war and make it the
the
war of art.
inversion.
Yeah, the
Yeah.
aversion. But that's also about, well, it's a little bit different, but that's mainly focusing on that inexplicable imaginary force that the blockage, that stops you from creating your art and breaking through that barrier. Those have helped me through the years.
Is that
Yeah.
something that you find challenging? Because I remember you in the past talking about how maybe not having the full-on energy or commitment to something like social
Yeah.
platforms like TikTok and YouTube. And I find this too on a much smaller scale than you, mind you. Like I'm a really small-time person. I do it part-time for because I enjoy it. But even I struggle sometimes with like the sheer reps, like just having to like do the same thing over and over again and being comfortable with it.
So,
Because it's just
yes.
so hard to get that
Yeah.
attention from
Totally.
the world, you know what I mean? Yeah.
So,
The grind, I guess.
I have ideas that I think about, pretty often that I want to move on, but then I throw them away, or I just put them on the back burner. But yeah, I'm fully consumed by my family and work that comes in that I don't have to work for, but the preparatory work I do less of these days simply because I just don't really have that time. And by time I mean also energy.
Yeah,
You
time is
know, it's
energy.
all it's
Energy
all
is time.
connect it's all it's all connected.
For sure. Yeah.
But there are things that I've been recently thinking about getting back on TikTok. When COVID happened, I was doing a lot of TikToks, but burnt me out. But I did it for like several months straight, every day. But we had so much time on our
That stuff
hands.
can be so crushing, man. Like,
And I had some success on it, but overall I couldn't continue. But I've been thinking about bringing it back, doing some Tom Cruise stuff that's fresh, and just simply doing a green screen behind me, because I think they have that ability on TikTok. You just place whatever images behind you, easy. And
You
just
gotta figure
focus.
out to lower the barrier of creating stuff, and that's the key.
Well, so I'm really good at improv, right? So I
Yeah.
and I say that only because I've had a lot of practice doing it.
Sure.
I do even long form improv with some of my peers in the business, my impressionist or impersonator friends. This guy Jeff Richards, for instance, who's an SNL and Mad TV alumni, who recently went super viral with a Gary Busey deepfake and his a buttered sausage thing. You'll have to check the clip after,
Oh, no way. I gotta check that out.
but
Yeah.
it's hysterical. Okay, and people thought it was really Gary Busey, so it went super viral. Buttered sausage, which he talks about in the spoof, is went viral itself as a hashtag. But I love working with guys like that because they help me become stronger as an improv artist. And one of my ideas is simply to take very topical, zeitgeist kind of things that are going on, like the top trending hashtags on Twitter, whatever it is, putting the green screen backdrop behind me of that hashtag, whatever it is, something like,
Whatever's topical right
whatever it
now,
is,
yeah.
Christmas, who knows, or people are
Yeah.
talking about whatever it is, but have Tom Cruise just riff on it in the
Yeah.
moment, and that's it. Very simple to
Right.
do. Hashtag, 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 but just try to stay on the most current topics,
Yep.
but as Tom Cruise ranting about
Just
it.
tap
Like,
into that cultural zeitgeist, figure
tap
out
into
a
the
system
cultural
that
zeitgeist
works.
and speak with, Tom Cruise's thing is all about knowing more than other people, like kind of a little bit of arrogance. So imposing his views on people, like the Matt Lauer interview where he tells him you're being glib, and then telling him he knows nothing about
Do that for the
psychiatry.
commentary.
You know nothing about psychiatry or psychology. I do. I studied it, So I think just basically putting experts in their place, whether it's on a podcast or just basically being an expert in all things on TikTok, is very funny.
Like Tom Cruise explains the world kind of thing. The last thing I want to ask you is actually a little bit about this, because when you're
Tell me.
inhabiting a character like Tom Cruise, you're kind of, it is a form of acting, like being somebody else. For someone like me who's never done it, other than maybe like one time acting in like high school or whatever, elementary school. But what does that experience feel like? Is it an out of body experience? Is it like, what is it like to be somebody else for a brief moment of time? And to have interactions with the real world, mind you, because you're like doing crowd work or whatever,
Hold
where
on, I lost you for a
people
second.
are seeing you for a brief moment in time as a heightened version of Tom Cruise. Like, what is that actually like?
Well, when I'm really channeling him or in the moment, and I usually get there with like a long form improv. I did this one sketch that one was nominated for a Webby, which is great. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a spoof on the Hollywood Reporter. It's a deep fake. We're all deep faked. It's like four impersonators, and we're all playing like different celebrities. There's Ewan McGregor and Robert Downey Jr. And it's a Hollywood roundtable. I think Variety Hollywood roundtable, but it's a spoof on that. And we basically improv for 45 minutes straight. And so what ends up happening is at a certain point, you really do become the character, and there is no Evan Ferrante anymore. And it's a beautiful feeling. On stage, which I've done stage stuff too, I love that because you really have a real connection with your audience, a visceral connection.
So Evan, it's been awesome having a conversation with you today. I felt like I learned a lot more about just your thought process and how you approach things. And thank you for taking the time.
Did I overshare too much
No. This is absolutely
or
the show to overshare anything and
okay.
everything. It's only very marginally a magic podcast at this point. So this is perfect. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome. My kid is now acting up in the back, but thank you for having me, James. It was a joy to be here, and can't wait to see it when it comes out.
Thank you for listening to Humans of Magic. You've made it to the end. Thanks so much. You're awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there are two ways to do so. The first way is the most powerful. Tell a friend. Tell them to check out Humans of Magic. I'd love it if you could spread the word. The second way is to join the Humans of Magic Patreon at patreon.com/humansofmagic. Patreon is the best way to directly support the show from a financial perspective. For as little as $2 a month, you can support me and join the Discord. It gives me the power to keep cranking out new episodes with your favorite magic people. If you want to go the $5 support route, you'll get a digital copy of the Humans of Magic book. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you, as always, making it all the way to the end, and we'll see you next time.